This is the Ultimate Issues Hour on the Dennis Prager Show. The third hour every Tuesday is the Ultimate Issues Hour. I have many ways of explaining it. One of my favorite is that it is the necessary component of life that if you have a map and you know exactly where you are, it is useless unless you know where you want to go. So the Ultimate Issues Hour is, one way of putting it at least, is about where you want to go. I am prompted to today's subject in the Ultimate Issues Hour on the basis of a report that I gave you briefly, the Templeton Prize, the most lucrative prize in the world, actually, to the best of my knowledge, the greatest sum of money in a prize, was just given to a theoretical physicist at Dartmouth who was a Brazilian. The physicist who's been there for 25 years or so, almost 30 years, Marcelo Gleiser. He's a physics and astronomy professor. Specializations include cosmology. Cosmology is the study of the origins of the universe, of the cosmos. He is described as an agnostic, but he refuses to write off the possibility of God's existence completely. Atheism, Gleiser told the French news agency AFP yesterday from Dartmouth, atheism is inconsistent with the scientific method. It is a belief in non-belief, so you categorically deny something you have no evidence against. I will keep an open mind because I understand human knowledge is limited. He goes on to say, it is extremely arrogant of scientists to come down from their ivory towers and make these declarations without understanding the social importance of belief systems. When you hear very famous scientists making pronouncements like cosmology has explained the origin of the universe and the whole, and we don't need God anymore, that is complete nonsense. We have not explained the origin of the universe at all. Okay, so that's today's subject. How do you deal with being an atheist, if you are one, when you understand that you can't know the most profound question of all, that science can't answer why anything is here? One of my favorite arguments for God's existence was given by a rabbi, Milton Steinberg, who was actually, it's a very tragic story, he's a major American rabbi in Detroit, I believe it was. And during services one Sabbath, he was actually shot to death by a mentally deranged congregant. And he was in his 40s, I believe. And he was a brilliant man. And he had a very powerful statement. The believer has to account for the existence of unjust suffering. The atheist has to account for the existence of everything else. That was a good one. That's a good one. And there is no accounting, and there never will be. Why is there anything that is not answerable by science? Science can tell you why things happen once they start, but not why they started. Science can't tell you why there's life. Now, unlike the origins of the universe, which will never be answered by science, at least one can say, an atheist can say, hey, it's true, we have zero explanation how we got to living things or organic matter from inorganic matter. We have zero explanation for that. That's true. But one day we will. Okay. I mean, it's very hard to argue with. But it is fascinating that even in our advanced state of scientific knowledge, science has a zero capacity to explain how we went from dead matter to living matter. That's a biggie. One of my favorite PragerU videos is given by Frank Pastore. Yep, Frank Pastore. I was pointing the four big bangs. That's very good. Yes, Caledes Canteros. Ms. Menkerish. That was correct. It's really terrific. The loss of Frank Pastore killed on a highway. A driver running into his motorcycle is really a terrible loss. It's a terrible loss to me personally. I saw him almost every weekday because he broadcast his show from the same studio that I did or that I do. And we've named the studio after him, Frank Pastore Studio. He was a great man, a great thinker. He's a major league pitcher. I don't know if there's another major league pitcher who ever became a major league theologian. He's a unique man. His wife's a unique woman, and she wrote a book about them, which is really worthy of reading. I wrote the introduction to it. So this is just personal and touching. Frank Pastore says there are four things atheism has to explain. The Big Bang originally can't. Why we went from inorganic to organic. I can't say it can't, but it hasn't. I don't remember the other two. I remember one of them, how we went from organic to consciousness. And that, self-awareness. How did that happen? I mean, all the great mysteries are unanswerable by science. Let's be honest. Science is a great tool. I'm alive because of science. I'm a big fan of science. Just for the record, the idea of being anti-science is so preposterous. I've never met anybody who's anti-science. How can you be anti-science? It's an absurdity. I don't worship science, but I love it. Virtually everybody I know is alive because of science. So you're not exactly going to get a very harsh attack here. It's scientists who demand too much from science. Or the notion, I'll tell you what drives me the craziest. There are a lot of things that drive me crazy. It's not the craziest, but it drives me crazy. That belief in God has no root in science. Now, that's absurd. That's truly an absurdity. People mutter these things as if they are just given truths, but that's not true. Science can fully argue for something that transcends matter. Of course it can. The idea that science, it's like, I give you an example. Look, when they found the Rosetta Stone was the key to understanding some ancient languages. They found the Rosetta Stone. What did they say? Look, these inscriptions mean something. They had no idea what they meant, but an intelligence put them there. They didn't say the wind eroded it. The wind had an effect on the stone, and the following letters in some other language came up. No, they assume an intelligence put it there. They can't prove it. We have a Rosetta Stone in all of us. It's called DNA. It's information. Who puts information if not intelligence? Of course science can argue for design and intelligence. Of course it can. That's our subject. 1-8-PRAGER-776. If you think science conflicts, give me a call.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager, and this is the Ultimate Issues Hour, third hour every Tuesday. By the way, the best of Ultimate Issues Hour is available at the Prager Store. Prager Store is the candy store for the mind. And I just want to remind you, the Rational Bible Volume 2 is coming out very shortly. You can pre-order it at Amazon or through the Prager Store. And it deals with this because of the first verse of the Bible, because Genesis is the second volume. The first volume was Exodus, even though it's not the order of the Bible itself. And I deal with this at great length there, the question of God's existence, because as I actually make the case that the first verse is the most important verse in the Bible. If you don't accept that, then it's really not worth reading the rest. God created the world. That's it. Simple as that. That's why it's so important, verse 1. It is mind-boggling to me that there are people who are atheists. And it's mind-boggling to the man who just won the Templeton Prize, a theoretical physicist at Dartmouth who's an agnostic. He doesn't believe in God, and he's not an atheist. But he says it's not possible for science to deny God's existence. It's just not possible. You should see the comments, though. Oh, it's just amazing. People, the lack of thought in the atheist world is just, the lack of intellectual depth is frightening because they think they're intellectual. But it doesn't mean all atheists are bad people. I'm not claiming that for a second. But the intellectual depth is not there. You should see the comments that they write. Oh, well, science can't disprove a unicorn. Okay. So that's the typical response to that. Oh, Prager believes in a fairy tale, you know. Oh, the I don't know, something in the sky, whatever it is. It's so interesting to read the comments. Whenever we put out a video with regard to God's existence at Prager University, it's just thousands and thousands of angry people. I don't know why they're angry. I'm not angry at atheists. I never bother writing in comments on their videos because deep down they feel threatened by people who believe in God. And I'm not sure why. Maybe because it comes with baggage that they don't like a God tells you how to live, like the Ten Commandments. They don't want to be told. But I can't imagine why else people would have, because it's purely emotional. As this professor of theoretical physics notes, there science cannot answer how it began. So it argues for a beginner. Oh, then my favorite. I deal with that too in the Rational Bible. Oh, well, all right, God created the world. Well, who created God? That people ask that question, it's mind-boggling. That's the only thing I can say. It's truly mind-boggling. Who created God? So let's say I say, who created God? Joe created God. Oh, who created Joe? The whole point of God is that God isn't created. That's the point. All right. To thine questions, or to thine comments, I should say. Glenn in Central, is that the name of the city or the area? Central South Carolina.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, this is Glenn, and people always ask that. Is that the town or what? You know, Central is the name of the town.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay, good. Thank you.
It's right next to Clemson.
Ah, all right, fair enough.
All right, but yeah, good to talk to you, Dennis, and I happen to be on the Science and Religion Hour, which is two of my favorite subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is my premise, that there is zero conflict between the Bible account of creation and so forth and the evolutionary anthropological explanations at the highest level, because I've been there. I've got my PhD in genetics. and evolution and plant breeding, and I practiced it. And finally, a few years ago, the two came together. And nobody told me that it's basically chapter 1 and chapter 2 of Genesis. Why are there two accounts? Are they the same? Are they different? I came to understand they are two separate accounts. The first, in 6 days, was the creation of the spirits of all the living things by his word. The second chapter is the creation of the bodies for these spirits to live in, which took generations and generations, an undisclosed amount of time.
Listen, that's great. There are so many ways, and obviously folks who are interested will read my Rational Bible Genesis coming out. And I deal with the Genesis 1-2 as well. I won't review it right now for everybody. We'll do it more when it happens. By the way, just so you should know, I am going to be in Orlando the day the book is published. It is a huge event. And if you would like to bring your kids there, it's at the Holy Land Resort or Holy Land, I think resort is the term, but I don't remember. It's going to be a major day. I'm flying across the country to do this. It's the actual day the book comes out. And if you have kids, we're going to have time to talk just the audience and myself. I'm going to do my show in front of the audience. So it's a very wonderful celebratory day. The information is, you could see the banner at my website in Orlando. It's May 6th. Boy, it's coming up. It's amazing. By the way, the book is beautifully printed. I want to give Regnery great credit. It is truly a beautiful book. And the contents hopefully match it. It's the best-selling commentary on the Bible in the United States and has been since publication. I know that without the Bible, the country becomes unrooted and chaotic. Wisdom, it becomes wisdom-free. Our universities used to insist that you know the Bible. Now you don't even learn it. No, there's not an hour devoted to it. But this is the ultimate issue, truly, of the ultimate issues. There's a beginning, and science can't explain it. That's what this physicist who won the Templeton Prize just said. He's right. We will continue. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour, or as they would say in Britain, issues. I prefer issues to issues. Do I prefer schedule or schedule? There are things I prefer in British pronunciation. However, issues is not one of them. It's just purely, by the way, it's completely subjective. There's no coherence to it. All right, everybody. Science and religion. I raise it because the Templeton Prize was given to a theoretical physicist. It's the largest amount of money in a prize in the world. And he is an agnostic, but he affirms that scientists have no business saying that there is no God. And it's an absurdity. And it is an absurdity to say that. Now, the question, it's obvious science and religion do not conflict. But the question is, does science even argue for God? And I think it does. Because now that we know that the DNA is information, just as much as a computer code is information. If you found a computer on Jupiter, you would assume that an intelligence had put it there. There's a computer in us. There's information in us, in living beings, DNA. How do you get information from non-information? I mean, I know this bothers people, but I don't know why it bothers people. That's why I told you, the only question I ask an atheist is, do you hope you're right or wrong? That's my only question. See, if they say, I hope I'm wrong, then I know I have an intellectually honest person who has simply come to a different conclusion than I have. But if they hope they're right, if they, how could you hope you're right? You really hope that when you die, that is it for eternity? You have no, there's nothing afterwards. There was no connection with loved ones. It is over for oblivion beyond forever. You hope that? You hope that there is no ultimate justice? You hope that those who suffered horribly under torture are not in some way compensated and the torturer in some way punished? You hope that? You hope that the world is random and meaningless? I mean, if you hope, if you're an atheist and hope you're right, there's something wrong with you. There's no question in my mind. There is something wrong with you. There's not something wrong with all atheists. There's something wrong with atheists who hope they're right. That's very important. I spoke for the American Atheist Group. They were wonderful to me. It couldn't have been nicer. I had a very wonderful experience there. It was their annual meeting in Minnesota. Number of years ago. Okay, let's go to Tampa, Florida, one of my favorite places. George, hello, George.
Hey, Dennis, how you doing?
Well.
Good, good. Well, my point is that science really does not support either theism or atheism. Science really only supports agnosticism. In my view, all intellectually honest, rational people are agnostic because it's really not knowable how the universe started, if it started. I mean, in my opinion, the most rational viewpoint is that the universe has always been here in one form or another. But you have to admit that you don't know, and you're Jewish. You have to admit that you don't know for certain that there's a God, correct?
Right, correct.
Yeah, so
yeah, but if you don't know for certain, that doesn't make you an agnostic.
Of course it does. What does it make you?
It makes you a
believer. It doesn't make you an atheist.
No, wait. No, very few people use the term knower. We use the term believer.
No. An agnostic is someone who admits that.
Do you know for certain? Let me ask you a question. Do you love music or art?
Music.
Okay. So I don't know if it's clear, but all right, just for the sake of argument, but it's an important argument. I don't know for certain that Beethoven's symphonies are great because it's not knowable for certain, but I believe they're great. And that belief is quite firm. That is the same term I would use with regard to God. I don't know for certain that there is a God any more than I know for certain that Beethoven's symphonies are great. But I am sure that they're great. I believe they're great, with great certitude. All right, y'all. Dennis Prager here, Ultimate Issues Hour, the so-called conflict between science and religion. And I raise it because today, the Templeton Prize, the most lucrative prize in the world, was given to a scientist, a theoretical physicist at Dartmouth, a Brazilian by birth. And he is an agnostic, but he has a real disdain for scientists who are atheists. So there's absolutely no basis for that. Let me try to give you the quotes again, because they're worthy of being noted. And here we go. Nope, that's not where we go. Oh, man. This is the dilemma of a talk show host, finding everything on time. Physicist Marcelo Gleiser, science does not kill God. We have not explained the origin of the universe at all. So interesting, the man who called earlier, and I thank him for the call, he believes the universe always existed. There was no beginning. It's an amazing thing to believe that. But even the term always is so bizarre. Time is relative. There's nothing that's always. The only always is if you have new universes always being created. But there's no basis for that belief. It is amazing what people will believe and then think that belief that there is a creator, that's really irrational. Oh, I believe in a multiverse. There are a whole infinite number of universes. Dennis, right now on another universe, is really a trash collector in Calcutta. Because there are an infinite number of universes. I mean, we have a video by a professor of astrophysics, UC San Diego, I believe it is, and he gives a great video on this, the notion of the simple scientific absurdity of a multiverse. People will believe in silliness in order not to believe in God. That's what it amounts to. So you could, the notion, oh, I believe in science, therefore I don't believe in God. It is a bizarre view of science. That's what the scientist is saying, who's an agnostic, who won the Templeton Prize. That's the reason, that's what provoked the subject today. Okie dokie, Patrick Cleveland, Patrick of Cleveland, Dennis Prager, hi.
Yeah, Dennis Prager, I'm a far right-wing conservative atheist, and I'm a huge fan of yours. I hope to go on one of your cruises sometime.
Great, I would love you to come. Thank you, thank you. God bless you. That was a joke.
No, it's fine. I have no problem people saying that.
I know. I just thought I would rib you.
I have no issues with Christians and Jews.
Right.
I have a lot of issues with Muslims, but no issues with Christians and Jews.
Right.
I have no problem with nativity scenes on public library lawns. And maybe society needs religion.
Yes.
They need something to believe in, whether it's true or whether it's false.
Right.
And I would love to die and go to heaven. And if your question on another show was, would you prefer your child to be a Christian or a Jew or a leftist? I would much rather them be a Christian or a Jew than a leftist.
Right. You're my kind
leftism
of guy. You think...
Evil.
Right. That's it. You got it right. You got it right. You see,
okay.
you are a perfect example of an atheist with whom I have everything in common.
Well, but, you know, the thing is, Dennis, is I don't understand why it seems that you're upset that there are atheists in the world. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems...
No, I'm upset. No. I acknowledged. That's why I told you how nice the people were at the American Atheist thing. I'm not upset. I'm upset with atheists who want to convert people to atheism, because
most of them are leftists.
Yes, of course they are. Exactly. So that I'm not upset that you're an atheist. Am I upset with you? I think you're terrific. What I don't understand is why you're not agnostic. That an atheist is pretty certain there's no God, and I don't know why you would have such certitude. It just doesn't it doesn't comport with.
I see no proof.
Oh, wait, I see. Okay, proof. Wait. Do you see evidence? Proof is a very dramatic term.
I see no evidence.
No evidence.
I believe in the physical world. How it works and how it all came about, I don't know. I don't think, we may never know. But I believe in the physical world. The physical world exists. It's self-evident.
Right, yes, and it's the
only... And if I'm wrong about something, I can live with it.
Right. No. I gather that. Right. But why do you think the physical world is the only thing that exists?
The only thing I see evidence for.
Evidence? Really?
Every time I've looked into supernatural, metaphysical, or magical instances, it always turns out to be nonsense. Always.
Always. So you don't believe... Well, look, you admire me. Do you think that I have suspended my rational faculties because I believe in God?
In this one particular case, yes.
Okay,
I see. You're fully entitled to.
No, I get you. You're a good man. I mean that sincerely.
I think your religion has made you the man you are. And I wouldn't want you to be any different. I almost see you like a father figure, which sounds crazy, and I'm not trying to blow smoke. I really mean this.
No, you're obviously not blowing smoke. It's not an issue, and I appreciate it. But there are so many, forget me, there are so many deep people who believe that there is a transcendent, that something transcends it. And again, the information issue, if you're such a big fan of science, there is data in us, data. Just like there's data in a computer. I don't know why that doesn't imply I have no proof. Of course not. As I said, I have no proof that Beethoven's symphonies are great, but I know they're great. Proof is proof. Knowledge is knowledge. There are a lot of different things going on. Back in a moment.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Yes, I'm a lucky man. That's what I'm thinking right now. Ultimate Issues Hour, third hour every Tuesday, science and religion. A theoretical physicist at Dartmouth, Brazilian-American, I guess by now, won the Templeton Prize and speaks about how foolish it is. He's an agnostic, but how foolish it is for scientists to be atheists. Which is, it seems to me that that's the logical position. I get agnosticism. I don't get atheism. I don't see how we both can look at something and say, oh, came about on its own. That's more logical than it was created. I don't know why that's more logical. That's what confuses me. It all came about on its own. I'm speaking to you now. You understand it. Came about on its own. The incredible complexity of everything that makes us, to mention the brain, the eye, did it on its own. Did it on its own? It makes more sense to you than it was made? That's where I, and I'm sure that for some of you that I think it was made, what, you're kidding me, it's made? Strikes you as intellectually unsustainable as I find, came about on its own, is. I don't, but it's just an unbridgeable gap. All right, let's see. Ken in Atlanta, main reason scientists don't want to believe in a creator is they want to avoid being accountable to God. I think that's the main reason in general for atheism. There are always exceptions, like the last caller, I suspect. But I think that that's the biggest issue. God means that there's judgment and the whole thing, and nobody, a lot of people don't like that. Let's see here. Science currently, yes. All right. Listen, Chris and Rose and Jim and Karen and Mike, I'm sorry. You have great stuff. Listen, I'd like to remind you, please, March is fundraising month for Prager University. We are changing minds. You hear it every day from some student. Please help us save this great country. We're really in the vanguard of doing it. What you give today is trebled. In other words, there is a donor who says he'll give three times what you give. PragerU.com, 833-PragerU if you want to call, or the banner at the DennisPrager.com website. And I make all these arguments in the Rational Bible. I hope you have read it or will read the next volume. Thanks for listening. I'm Dennis Prager.
The Dennis Prager Show, live from the Relief Factor Pain-Free Studio.
Are listening to the best of the Dennis Prager Show. Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager here. Every Tuesday, the third hour of my show is called the Ultimate Issues Hour. As many of you know, I have a great analogy for why this is significant. A map will give you a perfectly accurate statement of where you are. But if you don't know where you want to go, a map is useless. I think a lot of people have maps, but no destinations. So this hour is, in effect, the destination hour. What are the big issues? The big issues have always preoccupied me. In high school, I remember writing an essay on the moral necessity of the afterlife. not what most of my friends were thinking about. On the other hand, I do want you to know, folks, I went to hockey games every week. Just I did lead a normal life, semi-normal. Anyway, it's the Ultimate Issues Hour. I'm Dennis Prager, and I have a truly terrific guest. Man, I have tremendous respect for Stephen Meyer, director of the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute in Seattle. Would you tell people, I think it's important given that we're going to talk about science and faith, so tell people, don't be humble, some of your credentials in that arena.
Sure. I, as you mentioned, direct this network of scientists run out of the Discovery Institute in Seattle. My PhD is in the philosophy of science from the University of Cambridge in England. Prior to that, I worked as a geophysicist and did a double physics, geology, earth science degree in, as an undergraduate. And I've written a couple books, one Signature in the Cell on the question of the origin of the first life, and the second one called Darwin's Doubt, which is a question of, about the origin of the first animals, which appear very abruptly in the fossil record in contradiction to Darwin's own expectations of a very gradual origin for animal life.
So your life has been immersed in science. By the way, just I've never asked you this in all our time, both privately and on radio and public. What does the philosophy of science mean?
It's the discipline that addresses scientific questions that are right at the margin of science and philosophy, things about the nature and basis of human knowledge, what's called in philosophy epistemology, how we know what we know, but also questions about the consciousness, the origin of the universe, the origin of life. And these are the topics that have always really fascinated me. How did we get here? How did life get here? There's a huge scientific dimension to these questions, but they also have incorrigibly philosophical implications. And so
right.
I've always been attracted right at that boundary between the two. And you have to learn a lot of science to be any good in it, and you have to be thinking philosophically to make any sense of it.
It's a great combination. Did you enjoy your time at Cambridge?
Yeah, immensely.
Really?
Yeah. If you have to do something as grueling as a PhD, it's nice to do it in some place like Cambridge or Oxford where there are a lot of cultural compensations and wonderful people.
And the weather helps.
The weather's awful, but I'm
right.
from Seattle, so I was
already
inoculated.
Right. That's right. I never thought of that. His latest book, which he edited, is a collection of essays. And don't let the title in any way intimidate you. Theistic Evolution, a Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Critique. In other words, theistic revolution is the attempt of many and very good-willed people to reconcile God and evolution. And this is a series of essays critical
of that position.
Right,
yeah.
Of that position. So let me get to that. The book is up at DennisPrager.com. And obviously, any of you interested in theology or science will find this immensely interesting. So I mentioned to you right before we went on the air that until I met you, to be honest, my view was I didn't really care about evolution. It didn't bother me if it was true, and it didn't bother me if it wasn't true. I believed in God as the creator of the heavens and the earth, the God of Genesis 1. And if God used evolution, what do I care? It's all a miracle anyway. So that in a nutshell. Then I've read you and talked to you and my wife, frankly, who knows a fair amount, as you know, about evolution. And it has become less and less tenable, not for religious reasons, but for scientific reasons, to endorse the evolution as it is generally taught. So before we get to God and evolution, I know this is ridiculous in the time that I'm going to give you, but in a couple of minutes, can summarize evolution and why it's not...
Why we might be skeptical
and,
about it.
Well, yeah. And not only we...
Yeah.
Right, okay. But scientists,
right.
This is what you opened
right.
my mind to. Yeah. Scientists yeah. are having trouble with evolution.
Right, right.
Okay, go ahead.
So quick three definitions of the term evolution for orientation. The first is simply change over time. Nobody challenges that there has been change over time, or the kind of small-scale variation we see in Galapagos finch beaks or peppered moths or bacteria that acquire antibiotic resistance. That's sometimes called microevolution. Second definition of evolution is the idea of universal common descent and the idea that all organisms are connected by common ancestry back to one or very few simple forms, such that the best picture of the history of life is like a giant branching tree. That was part of Darwin's argument, the origin. And the third and most controversial meaning of evolution is the idea that there's an unguided, undirected mechanism, namely natural selection acting on random mutations, that can produce all the new forms of life that have emerged in the history of life, that produces all the change over time, and that mechanism is also responsible for the appearance of design that biological systems manifest, that even leading evolutionary biologists acknowledge. So those are three key definitions. The first is innocuous. Nobody doubts it. The second is somewhat controversial. The third is
deeply controversial. Where do you stand on the second, on the tree?
I'm skeptical about the universal common descent. There's a lot of discontinuity in the fossil record and in the genomic patterns that we're now observing. But the key issue, and the one that leading evolutionary biologists themselves are now questioning, is the idea that the mutation selection mechanism has genuine creative power, the ability to generate fundamentally new forms of life. So what you'll hear a lot of evolutionary biologists quoting now, an aphorism, is that mutation selection explains the survival but not the arrival of the fittest. It explains the small-scale variations, but not the major innovations. And in virtue of that, 2 years ago this time, I was at a conference of the Royal Society in Britain, the oldest and arguably most august scientific body in the world. They called a conference to assess modern neo-Darwinism, and specifically to call for a new theory of evolution. Many of the evolutionary biologists there were deeply unhappy with the idea that mutation and selection has creative power. The opening talk at the conference by Gerd Müller, a leading Austrian evolutionary biologist, enumerated several key, what he called explanatory deficits of the modern version of Darwin's theory, neo-Darwinism. A number of the deficits that he enumerated were things that I had written on at length in my own book, Darwin's Doubt.
This is stunning. The Royal Society, what is the full name?
The Royal Society of London. It was started by, you know, Robert Boyle. Newton was one of its first presidents.
Just reading about them yesterday. Yeah. Okay. So that's incredible. They had a conference on the weaknesses of the traditional Darwinian explanation?
Where most, if not all, of the talks were exploring some new mechanisms that could supplement, complement, replace the standard mutation selection mechanism. The odd thing about the conference, however, was that there was a group of what they call themselves third way people. They don't want to associate with those of us who are supportive of intelligent design, and that is a growing number of scientists, by the way. But they reject standard neo-Darwinism, so they're looking for another approach. They have one group of those scientists is known as the Altenburg 16, and one of the scientists who was involved in that, who helped call the conference, declared at the end of this Royal Society conference that it was interesting, but it was characterized by a lack of momentousness. In other words, they did a good job of critiquing the neo-Darwinian mechanism, but nothing really was offered to solve this problem.
Yeah, because they've rejected out of hand intelligent
any
design.
any guidance, any mind or purpose in the process by which life arises.
So where those flaws might be, and then the issue of reconciling, if possible, God and this and evolution. My guest is Dr. Stephen Meyer, director of the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute in Seattle. He has now edited Theistic Evolution, A Critique. All right, everybody. My guest on this Ultimate Issues Hour, third hour every Tuesday, the Ultimate Issues Hour, is Dr. Stephen Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R. The Discovery Institute is one of my favorite places. These are a bunch of scientists who have the audacity to believe that there is actually a divine hand, a creator involved in the universe, which is, to me, the single most rational position one can have. The notion that intelligence comes from non-intelligence is not intelligent. That was a new one.
That's good.
Yeah, I like that. I think we need a microphone here, and right, you're not. I think we got a. My guest is Dr. Stephen Meyer, and his latest book he is editor of is a collection of essays, Theistic Evolution: A Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Critique of the Notion that God is behind evolution, and this is a critique of that. So let's go to evolution itself. I periodically have you on. As far as I'm concerned, I could have you on every day. And I mean it. I adore you. I adore your work. And you have the requisite scientific background to answer these issues. This that you just reported that the Royal Society in London would have a conference on, and tell me if my summary is fair, is it tenable to continue to believe in the Darwinian notion
the creative power of mutation and natural selection? This was the key proposition under consideration.
So what you have led me to understand, and I was agnostic on evolution much of my life. I didn't really care. I believe in God as the creator, and the methodology did not interest me. But I don't want to believe in or even be agnostic about something that just isn't upheld by scientists. So what's the biggest weakness?
The biggest weakness, I think, has to do with the problem of the origin of form, new innovation of fundamentally new forms of life. But that requires a prior innovation, and that is innovation of information, the creation of information. Since Watson and Crick in 1953, we have understood that information in a digital form inscribed along the spine of the DNA molecule is essentially running the show at the cellular level in biology. If you want to build a new form of animal life, you've got to have new tissues and cell types, but new cell types require new dedicated proteins to service them. And proteins are constructed on the basis of the information, a four-character code that is stored in the DNA molecule. So new form requires new information. And as we've understood more about the digital nature of the information, it really isn't. It's alphabetic or typographic or digital in character. And we understand that by reference to, say, our own experience with computer code. The idea that you could randomly start to change very specific arrangements of characters that are designed to construct one thing and turn them into another message that will construct another completely different thing is implausible. If you take a section of computer code and start randomly changing the zeros and ones, you're not going to produce a new program or operating system. You're going to introduce glitches and bugs, and you'll ultimately destroy the function of the original sequence that you had. And the genetic sequence is similarly vulnerable to that kind of random mutational change. And yet the neo-Darwinians invoke random mutation as the agent of innovation, the agent of creation, when in fact it's either an agent of destruction or it can introduce very minor preservable changes that might slightly tweak or optimize an existing form.
All right, so when I hear you say this, I'm thinking of all the preeminent scientists of the last 100 years who have believed what you now say is not tenable. What does that say? If you're right, what does that say about scientists?
That science, like every other form of human endeavor, can be subject to groupthink or it can be influenced by prior ideological commitments. In particular, in the debate about biological origins, there is a prior commitment to a materialistic approach to the question. It's codified in a principle known as methodological naturalism. And it says that if you're going to be a true scientist, you have to limit yourself to strictly materialistic explanations for everything, not just how nature ordinarily operates, which would be quite sensible, but where nature itself came from. And that principle then precludes the possibility of precludes consideration of a designing intelligence. And yet, what have we discovered at the foundation of life? We've discovered digital code. Bill Gates, our local hero in the Seattle area, says that DNA is like a software program, only much more complex than any we've ever devised. Well, where does software come from? It comes from a mind. We have all sorts of indications of intelligent activity at the foundation of life. We've got digital code. We have a complex information processing system. We have nanotechnology, miniature machines that are mind-blowing in their integrated complexity. We've got circuitry controlling the expression of genetic information. And no persuasive Darwinian explanation has been offered for any of this type of complexity, the integrated or organizational complexity at the microscopic level.
So it's basically all some aberration was born, and it prospered because it was better than the previous.
A plausible theory in the 19th century was formulated by Darwin before we knew about the complexity of life at the microscopic and molecular level. In the wake of that theory, a principle of reasoning was codified among scientists, namely that we must limit ourselves to materialistic explanations of the kind that Darwin promulgated. And then as the evidence from the 1950s, 60s, and right to the present has begun to stack up, evidence that would in any other realm of experience point to a designing intelligence, the principle of methodological naturalism has prevented many scientists from considering the obvious implication.
Right. Okay, I'm totally on board. The question that you have taught me to ask is, are even the people who only believe in a naturalist or a material explanation, are they starting to question traditional?
They are.
All right, hold on. Yeah. That's what we'll get the answer to. Hello, my friends. Welcome back. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour. I'm Dennis Prager. The third hour of my show every Tuesday is on some great issue. Can't get greater than evolution and God, and you can't get a greater spokesman on this. There are many wonderful ones, but you can't get a greater one than Stephen Meyer, whose books are truly seminal in this arena. The Signature of the Cell, is that
Signature
correct?
Signature in the Cell.
Signature in the Cell. And what is the other one?
Darwin's Doubt.
Darwin's Doubt. And now he has edited a collection of essays. And the title sounds very academic, but it is not. Theistic Evolution. In other words, is there a God who directed evolution, as it were? And this is a critique of that, a series of essays. The book, again, Theistic Evolution, it's up at DennisPrager.com. So go ahead.
Well, Dennis, maybe I could say one thing about just that issue of is there a God who directed evolution? It's really important to understand that in the Darwinian frame of reference, the Darwinian schema, that evolution is a completely undirected process. That's why there's an emphasis on natural selection. Darwin developed the concept of natural selection in contrast to what human breeders can do to select certain traits to make sheep woolier over time or pigeons, dog breeding, where we select traits that we want to see amplified over time. What Darwin argued was that changes in the environment could accomplish the same end, and so that instead of there being artificial or intelligent selection, nature could do the selecting. So one of the odd things about theists who want to synthesize evolution with belief in some sort of divine creation or guidance of the process by which things have come to be is that they're trying to synthesize they're trying to say that God is directing an inherently undirected mechanism. And that presents a logical problem, irrespective of the scientific problems that we were talking about, namely that the mutation selection mechanism lacks creative power. So it's also odd.
It's God or evolution. It's not – you can't have God and evolution because definitional to evolution is random.
Random and undirected in the sense that nature is doing the selecting, not an intelligent agent. And of course, there are other meanings of evolution, like the simple meaning change over time or microevolutionary change with the finch beaks and the peppered moths, things that no one disputes. But the main mechanism of macroevolution is understood in both modern and classical Darwinism as a completely undirected process. And that's why there's a kind of a logical problem for theistic evolution. Can God direct an undirected process? Well, no, even God can't direct an undirected process. If he does, it's no longer undirected.
So the argument I get from this guy at my workout studio who's an atheist is that, this How could science argue for the non-material?
That's science!
That's right. He's the guy. So if you sneeze, he says science.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
We made it. Somewhat of a joke. But so his argument is, how could you, you know, you want to believe in God, go right ahead. That's fine. But you can't use science to argue for God because science can only talk about that which is material.
Well, actually, that's an artificial restriction on the scientific method. And we, and point one, point two is that we actually infer the activity of mind all the time. We do it in our ordinary experience. If you're an insurance fraud detector and you determine that somebody was manipulating circumstances, you've inferred the activity of mind. If you're a forensic scientist, if you're an archaeologist and you look at the Rosetta Stone, you don't say, gee, isn't it wonderful what wind and erosion did to produce those information-rich inscriptions. You recognize that there was a mind behind it. So the theory of intelligent...
That's a good one.
The theory of intelligent design is developing...
Right, DNA is a Rosetta Stone.
It is an information-rich system. And what we know from our uniform and repeated experience, which according to Darwin, by the way, is the basis of all scientific reasoning about the past. What we know from our uniform and repeated experience is that information always comes from an intelligent agent, from a mind, whether we're looking at the Rosetta Stone, computer code.
Right, that's a scientific
fact.
That's
a scientific inference. That's a scientific connection, an
right.
inference. Yeah.
My guest is Stephen Meyer, Stephen, M-E-Y-E-R. Any of his books will be mind opening for you. And he writes as clearly as he speaks. The latest is his editing of Theistic Evolution, a critique of it. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour. Well, as any of you who know me know, this is about as wonderful as it gets for me to talk about the ultimate creation by a creator. And using reason to get there, only reason. That's why, of course, you know my own book is called The Rational Bible. I think that God gave us reason and we should use it. That's what Stephen Meyer embodies, PhD in the philosophy of science from Cambridge, director of the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute in Seattle, latest book, collection of essays, a critique of theistic evolution, called Theistic Evolution. But you must get his previous two books. That's critical. Signature in the Cell and...
Darwin's Doubt.
Darwin's Doubt, yes.
Thank you for the plug, Dennis.
Many plugs, because you deserve them. They're in very, very important works. I want to go to another thing now. I had... Krauss. Yeah, I had Lawrence Krauss on the show for an hour on this, who wrote this. What was the title of his book? Something from Nothing?
The Universe from Nothing.
The Universe from Nothing. So, obviously, I'm not going to knock anything he said. He's not here. But I remember there was a moment when he said, well, because I said, look, I don't have anywhere near scientific knowledge, but I think clearly and logically. You're claiming we get something from nothing, and that is inherently not possible. And then he said, well, it depends on your definition of nothing. And that's when I gave up. I said, Professor, nothing means no thing. I mean, was I wrong? I mean, is nothing nothing?
As a matter of logic, you're absolutely right. What Professor Krauss is talking about is a theory of cosmology, or a cosmological model known as quantum cosmology, in which the universe is thought to emerge out of the laws of quantum physics.
Right. So he said that, and
right.
I asked him, where did the laws come from?
Right. And there's some other things we could ask about those laws. First of all, laws of physics do not produce matter. They describe the interactions between matter. So
that's a good one.
Big category mistake. Okay, so the law of momentum exchange describes how billiard ball A knocks into billiard ball B if you've got billiard balls. It doesn't. It describes the interaction between pre-existing matter. That's one problem. Another problem is that this quantum cosmology, it's pretty heady stuff, but it's based on some of the phenomena in quantum physics, the physics of the very weird when things are very small. And it is basically a probabilistic law. And it's created the law itself is something we're not sure if it's really true or not, but it's been generated by an analogy to known quantum physical processes where particles can act like waves and waves can act like particles, and the probability of the particle being in any one place is defined by this law of quantum mechanics or this equation, the Schrodinger equation. Well, they've tried to use that same kind of math to say, well, maybe there's a whole bunch of different – there's an equation that could describe all the different possible universes that could exist.
Okay, right. The multiverse. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to get to that in one moment. They have another thing too. The Big Bang disturbed them. God and the astronomers.
That's what this is all about, to circumvent the implications of the Big Bang.
Right, because it means there was a beginning and matter wasn't always here, but God was always here, and this drives them crazy. Okay, so how do you answer – they now argue the Big Bangs will go on indefinitely and have gone on indefinitely.
That's a different cosmological model, but
I know that.
Yeah, let's finish the thing with the quantum cosmology.
Fair enough.
It's really interesting.
Okay.
Because what they basically want is they want a mathematical equation to explain where our universe comes from. If our universe can be shown to be a reasonably probable outcome of what they call the quantum wave equation or the quantum wave function, then they think they will have explained the universe. But one of the more astute proponents of quantum cosmology, Alexander Vilenkin, said, well, wait a minute. Math, we're saying that math is basically producing a material universe, but he says math is something that exists in a mind. Are we therefore saying that to the material universe, there's actually a mind? And that's not a very congenial conclusion because this is basically a materialistically inspired cosmology. The other thing that's really strange is that in order to solve the equation that gives you a universal wave function out of which our universe might be a reasonably probable outcome, the theoretical physicist has to impose what are called boundary constraints on the degrees of mathematical freedom of this equation, which is actually imparting information into the math to get the outcome they want. So they're actually modeling the need, an unexplained infusion of information to get the universe. So even if you could get matter out of math, you still can't get the information needed to produce the universe.
Right. Well, anyway, you can't get matter out of math.
In the beginning was the word.
So go on the Big Bang.
Yeah. So there's a number of these materialistic cosmologies that are trying to circumvent the clear and obvious implication of the Big Bang, which is that the universe, the material universe, the physical universe, had a definite beginning in time, space, matter, and energy. Hawking and Penrose proved this with something called the singularity theorem in the late 60s. There's been an additional proof of this called the Bohr-Guth-Vilenkin theorem. And the physicists and cosmologists have been going crazy trying to try to find a way to circumvent this conclusion. Hawking himself worked on circumventing his own proof. He was the originator of this quantum cosmological idea that Krauss has popularized. But it doesn't really work for the reasons I've specified. And then there's another version of this where they want – it's called the inflationary cosmology, where you have one Big Bang after another Big Bang after another Big Bang. It was mainly designed to circumvent the problem of the fine-tuning of the universe. But the odd irony of that whole effort is that the mechanism by which you would get the multiple Big Bangs itself has to be exquisitely fine-tuned to tend to the...
Anyway, there's no evidence for it.
And there's no evidence. These are entirely speculative cosmological models.
Yes, that and the multiverse are far greater leaps of faith than we who believe in God make.
Right. I gave a talk on this the other night here in Southern California, and remember the thing from Alice in Wonderland's Six Impossible Things Before Breakfast?
You know, yeah.
Well, these naturalistic cosmologies force you to posit multiple abstract explanatory entities, inflaton fields, inflaton shutoff energies, strings, multi-dimensions of space to explain the very thing that one God would explain
simply.
Let's
get an inflaton energy field for the next show. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour. He is so good, Dr. Stephen Meyer, my guest, that I have an idea. I'm going to have you on again just to take challenges, specifically on evolution and intelligent design. I think it would be terrific. It would be good for my listeners, be good for me, good for you. Well, I don't know if it's good for you.
Always good to be put through your paces.
Right,
absolutely.
But you'll be working so hard. I'll just be moderating. Dr. Stephen Meyer is a PhD in the philosophy of science, so you have to know both science and philosophy. This is not a philosophy course. You better know your science to get that PhD. Director of Science for Director of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute of Seattle. Discovery Institute of Seattle is scientists who believe in intelligent design. It is amazing to me. I am just amazed at the mockery of the concept that there might be a mind behind the mind. The world is made by information, but the information was not given by an information giver. Why that is considered more rational than the idea that information comes from information. Your Rosetta Stone is perfect. Why not say the wind blew letters onto this stone?
There are so many examples of rational agents detecting the activity of other rational agents and the effects that the rational agents leave behind. Think of the sculptures at Mount Rushmore. No one would say that was the product of wind and erosion. Anytime we encounter informational text, digital code, hieroglyphic inscriptions, we immediately infer the prior activity of mind because of what we know from our uniform and repeated experience, which is the basis of all scientific reasoning.
Right.
One of the ironies of my two previous books is that I self-consciously used the method of scientific reasoning that Darwin himself pioneered to investigate causes in the remote past. And one of his principles was that if you're going to explain an event in the remote past, you should look for a cause now in operation, or what he called a vera causa in the Latin, a true cause, a cause known to produce the effect you're trying to explain. And when I started thinking about that deeply in respect to the question of the origin of information, I thought, well, what do we know about the origin of information? It always comes from a mind.
Right. Next time I have another agenda with you, and I know what I know the question I'm going to open up with. All right, we know you believe in God. Do you love God?
We've discussed this at dinner, have we not?
I thought it was at dinner. We didn't have a couple of million people tuning in. Stephen Meyer's latest book, Theistic Evolution, but look for all his books. I'm Dennis Prager.
The Dennis Prager Show, live from the Relief Factor Pain-Free Studio.